about slop on your journey going forward. I thought I would pick a kind of a general topic for the, you know, for the first presentation. The Yeshiva's learning Masachat Shavuos is here, which happens to be one of my favorite Masachtas. Shavuos, of course, is divided up into really three parts. You could say more, but at least generally three parts. The first two prakim are a little bit more exotic. I don't know how many of you have done them. Beginning with the Maris Negaim, and going on to some other matters of Taharos, and especially of Kodshim. And that's a very challenging Libun. And then you have, of course, the third parak, which focuses very much on Nedarim. It's really the counterpart to Masachet Nedarim. It's the Shavuos emphasis, of course. And it provides an opportunity to learn the Inyanim of Nedarim and Shavuos and Hafla generally, but in a context where the Rishonim, make very important contributions, because we don't have that in Nedarim. And then, of course, from the fourth parak till the end of the and to the eighth parak, I guess officially, eighth parak is very small, you really have the Shavuos of Dayanim, or the Shavuos of Choshen Mishpat, we call them. Beginning with Shavuos Eidos in the fourth parak, the idea of Kvishas Eidos, the idea that somebody is, one person is responsible, or Eidim are responsible to come forward at the behest of the Baldavar, you need to add Yishma Mipia Toveya. But the idea that one Jew can demand evidence from two others, and that literally they are considered to be machside mamon. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the shir part. Try to integrate the two presentations a little bit. But that's a very fascinating halacha. It's one thing to say that there is like a moral desirable. Value for people to come forward if they know evidence. The idea that if you don't, that somehow that's a criminal act, that being aware and not stepping forward, it constitutes some sort of criminality which would justify the bringing of a korban, that's really quite a remarkable phenomenon. Again, I'm not, I've never done research in comparative law on this particular point, but I would be very surprised if there were many systems, or maybe even any systems, which treated reluctant witnesses or refusing witnesses in such a manner. And surely that says something. Then you move on to the fifth parak, which is about Shavuos HaPikadon, and that too is very fascinating because it's a shvua, in the context of Gezel. And it's an interesting amalgam of... again, Iser and Choshen Mishpat, because on the one hand, it's an issue of Gezel, and Gezel is, as we'll discuss in a minute, maybe the most basic, most obvious area in any legal system, that if you have to pick one area of law, which every culture, every society requires, it's going to be laws of damages, and even more basic than that, laws of, crime and criminality. And no society can tolerate when one person steals from another. So in that sense, Gezel is like the most basic. Nezek and Gezel are the most basic categories of any legal system. But the idea that somehow taking a shvua enhances the Gezel, or that the Gezel somehow enhances the violation of the shvua, this kind of interesting mix is something which is quite extraordinary. The fact that the Rambam deals with these topics, both Shavuos Eidos and Shavuos HaPikadon, primarily in Hilchos Shavuos and Sefer Hafla, is very fascinating. But the story of the fourth and fifth prakim, I'm not sure if you guys learned the fourth and fifth prakim. It seems like most of you are learning the sixth and seventh prakim. But the fourth and fifth, assume you're doing it Bikias or whatever, the real story there is the interplay between the Shavua part and the Hefsed Mamon part. But it highlights a certain orientation that the halacha has, to mixing, these kind of things. And that's really what I want to speak about. The sixth parak, of course, is Shavuos HaDayanim. And, there you have a more obvious... Thank you very much. Everything you could want. A Rambam, Ben Yonah, all good things. Okay, thank you very much. maybe a cup. But we could do it the old-fashioned way if we have to. But just don't want to set a bad example, you know. Okay, hey, but the sixth parak and the seventh parak, of course, are more, you know, concretely, you know, pure choser mishpat. So again, you work your way in this masechta from, like, you know, real esoteric lore, you know, Maris Negayim, which is a lot of fun to learn, but not something that you would find in any other legal system, to Tuma and Kadshim, as I say, to the interface of Shavua and Choshe Mishpat, to pure Choshe Mishpat. But even the pure Choshe Mishpat is a Choshe Mishpat, you know, in which, you know, religion, let's say, as opposed to just Ben Adam Lechavero, plays a critical role. Kol Olam Mizdazeya, right? Everybody trembles when, you know, when they think of the possibility of a Shua Sheker. So it's a fascinating thing. In our yeshiva, we're learning about Metzia this year, the interface between the sixth parak of Shavuos, sixth and seventh, but especially the sixth, and the first parak of Bab Metzia is a very important piece in learning either. You can't learn the first parak of Bab Metzia without learning parts of the sixth parak of Shavuos, and vice versa. So this idea of, in which we have in Bab Metzia, of Chashud HaMamona Chashud HaShavuasa, you know, if a person is already suspect that he is a liar and that he's going to steal somebody's money, so why do we believe him when he takes a shvua, you know, in Beis Din? And there are all sorts of issues. Benanos, who comes up in the seventh parak of Shavuos, you know, can you, even in the sake, even though you know you're right, and or the Dayanim, you know, suspect, you know, that one is right and the other is wrong, can they impose Shavuos when they think that a Shavuos Shav or a Shavuos Sheker is going to emerge? And that's what I'm trying to suggest is that even though oaths, shvuos, are used in the context of a din Torah to establish credibility or to, you know, encourage people to move away from being avaryanim, and that's a very important tactic, and it's a tactic which is being used purely in a choshen mishpat sense, but nonetheless, the idea that, you know, this shvua b'shem Hashem, which is, you know, pure Bein Adam Lamakom, you know, can be a mechanism in the Bein Adam Lechavero. It's certainly not the separation of church and state, I can tell you that. And the Kol Olam Nizdazeya, and on the one hand, and the, you know, Chashur Mamon Chashur Shvuaso, and then the Benanos, you know, on the other hand, namely, even in the context of, you know, having this mechanism, but you don't want to turn Shavua into something which is a joke, or something which people will relate to, you know, less reverently. So these factors kind of highlight once again that we're not dealing with a traditional, you know, system of civil law. We're dealing with something which is very much integrated, you know, into the broader theme of Yahadus, and that's really what characterizes Yahadus uniquely and singularly. It's the very fact that there is this shiluv, this integration of these things, and then this Masechta, Masechet Shavuos, from beginning, you know, to end, this is very much highlighted. So I thought that, you know, given this background, that we would just take a broader view of the concept of Choshen Mishpat in Halacha, and, you know, that both is reflected and reinforced by the particular Masechta that you're learning and a lot of the details of what you're learning. So try to get back to that as well. But, you know, which is also deepened by understanding that this isn't something that is unusual. This is something which is typical, really, of the halacha's perspective, you know, on these matters. So let me just take a step back before we go. Ah, thank you. Okay, now, okay, we'll have etiquette, you know, as well as substance. That's your call. Okay. I feel badly. I'm the only one drinking. I would offer you all a drink, but I guess I'm not the host. Very good water, too. Thank you. You and Aiden. So as I mentioned before, let's just take a step back for a moment and just look at this in broader strokes. Every culture, every society has to have some sort of legal system. You know, without that, chaos ensues. And, you know, chaos can be enjoyable for you know, a short period of time, but no one wants to suffer the fallout of chaos, you know, for too long. Chaos theory is good, but not chaos itself. Therefore, every culture needs to develop some sort of perspective on law and some sort of a minimal legal system. Deterrence, coping mechanisms, you know, what happens when people struggle with each other. People need their space. They need their property protected. They need their privacy. These are like just very basic human requirements. And therefore, ordering a society in an efficient manner and maintaining some sort of you know, separations or protections of basic rights is a critical component in any society that wants to be effective as a society. In other words, if you basically have a mentality of you know, people living as individuals, you know, and all you want from society is, you know, broad protections or efficiency, then you can have a more minimalist system. But even then, you're going to require something. If, on the other hand, you like have greater aspirations for your society, you know, you want to, you know, project certain, you know, ethical or other values, so then your legal system is going to be a little bit more complicated. So the more ambitious, I would say, the system, the more you need to project that system's ideology or its values, the more extensive and complex your legal system is going to be. In secular thinking, so, you know, there's a whole literature about, you know, about law and about the, you know, way to regulate, you know, human, you know, interaction. And we find, say, different views. There are those who are more minimalist in their perspective, people like Thomas Hobbes and the modern school of the positivists. We're not going to go into detail, but you should just know that there is such a thing. People who are very, like, have a very pragmatic view, an efficient view of society and man's need for, you know, community. And as I say, therefore, they're much more minimalist. You know, Moshe Lamad Avardome, one could say. I don't know if everybody here is from the United States of America. Everybody here from America?
England.
Where from?
England.
England. Ah, okay. So I don't know about the Whigs and the Tories and the and that. But what do we have in there? What we have now, the Labor and the Conservatives. It's like they're very similar. You know, in America right now, so you have the Democrats and the Republicans. And if you ever hear, if you ever go through any of these campaigns, and definitely you do in, you know, I too am, by the way, a member of the Empire, or I was anyway. I'm now, you know, I'm now an American citizen, but I was born in Canada, so I you know, I can identify. You know, so whenever they have these campaigns, so you hear almost ad nauseum, you know, this, you know, the Republicans, you know, going on and on and on about, you know, big government, you know, like you almost have nightmares about, you know, big government, you know, interfering in people's lives and taking away their liberties. And then you have the Democrats who are, you know, who are, you know, also just as ranting in their presentations about, you know, the need to, you know, increase, you know, social programs and other programs, you know, that will protect, you know, the various populations in our society. And I'm assuming that it's that case in any democratic country. This is part of the conversation. Minimalist government or maximalist government? So in a sense, like the Hobbes people, the positivist people, they're the theorists behind this idea of like a more minimalist government. Government is like a necessary evil to promote efficiency, to protect the basic rights, but nothing beyond that. You know, the, you know, Lahavdil equivalent of the Democrats, let's say, so, you know, you have Aristotle and Plato, some of the more classic, you know, philosophers, who believed in a natural law and, you know, a divine law to some extent. And therefore, their view of the role of government, if you read, you know, Plato and Aristotle in particular, is much more expansive and has greater ambition, you know, attached to it. But having said that, even the most maximalist, you know, secular interpretation of law and its advocates of its function, in the end of the day, you know, are very amenable to a very, you know, flexible approach to government because they're interested in the results, you know, not in the details. The norms, you know, don't have any status. They're not invested with any kind of sanctity. And therefore, there's no concept of like an immutable, you know, system of law, or one whose details reflect, you know, religious values, the Rabbonu Shalom's will in the world. That's something which we don't really encounter. And therefore, when society changes, law changes, you can, you know, vote in and out, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats and the conservatives and the labor people, you know, as you wish, in a democratic, obviously, context. I'm not talking about a monarchy or a totalitarian regime. Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was a great jurist and really kind of embodied the tradition of pragmatism in America in the post Civil War period. So he wrote a very famous work called The Common Law, which became a classic in legal scholarship. And his formulation of law as being something very pragmatic also became very classically known. I always like to quote it because it's almost like word for word the opposite of what the Rav writes about, in Isha Halacha. And I think it very much highlights, the two different perspectives. He writes that the life of the law has not been logic, it has been experience. The felt necessities of time, the prevalent moral and political theories, intuitions of public policy, avowed or unconscious, even the prejudices which judges share with their fellow man, have had a good deal more to do with than the syllogism, in determining the rules by which men should be governed. This is a very pragmatic statement of law. In other words, not logic, not ideals per se, but the way that history and experience and efficiency motivate someone. The law embodies the story of a nation's development through many centuries. It can be dealt with as if it contained, and it cannot be dealt with as if it contained only the axioms and corollaries of a book of mathematics. In the Isha Halacha, which I don't have in front of me, but the Rav and also elsewhere in his writings, compares the system of halacha to an a priori system of beliefs and of concepts, which are very much, he says, mashalama davardome, like theoretical physics or mathematics. I mean, rules that are universal, and the exact opposite of Oliver Wendell Holmes. In order to know what it is, we must know what it has been and what it tends to become. We must alternatively consult history and existing theories of legislation. But the most difficult labor will be to understand the combination of the two into new products at every stage. The substance of the law at any given time pretty nearly corresponds, so far as it goes, with what is then understood to be convenient. But its form and machinery and the degree to which it is able to work out desired results depend very much upon its past. So the last part about the past, the Masorah part, is something which strikes a chord. But the presentation, and he was, a giant, he was considered to be a transformative figure in American law, is, a statement, a very strong statement, about the pragmatic, functional, efficient, subjective, flexible character of law. But Yahadus obviously sees things in very different terms. On the one hand, if we take especially the area of Chosha Mishpat, Jewish civil law, where you have the overlap with other systems, so it's just very intriguing to analyze that in particular with an eye towards comparing and contrasting. In other words, if I were to say to you, to zero in on, Kodshim and Taharos and Zraim, so it would be obvious that there's no analog, in secular law, and it would also be obvious that the focus of those areas, those mikzaot haTorah, is very much ben adam lamakom, and values that are connected to that. Because what is taharos? I mean, it's this high level of ritual purity, living a life in a certain way. It's all spiritual, and kachim is the avoda, and zroim is about our connection to Eretz Yisrael, and it's also about acknowledging that the Rabbonu Shalom is the master of the world and not us, and therefore we have to, we acknowledge that by being, Torem, and by being Maaser, and by, stopping from working the field, and being Mafkir, our Bailus, every 7 years in Shnas HaShemitah, or every 50 years in Shnas HaYobel. It's evident that this is all spiritual and religious. But when we focus on the area of Chosha Mishpat, So there, we have really a unique opportunity, because that's the most pragmatic part and the most, you know, human interface part of Jewish law. That's where efficiency really does matter. We want a system which were very workable as well. So the overlap is greatest, and then the question of examining it under a microscope or maybe you don't need a microscope, in order to, you know, discern the differences, become very powerful. And that's really what I want to emphasize a little bit in the time that we have. On the one hand, as I say, even the halacha recognizes that Choshen Mishpat is more flexible and more pragmatic. The tour begins Choshen Mishpat by quoting Rabbeinu Yonah in Avos. Rabbeinu Yonah in Avos speaks about two Mishnayos. The first one is Al Shlosh Advarim Ha'olam Omeid, Al Torah Al Avoda Al Gemilas Chasad. The second one is Al Shlosh Advarim. I'm going to say it this way, and I'll explain in a minute. There are different girsos. Ha'olam Kayam, right? Din, Shalom, and Emes. So the question is, what is the relationship between those two lists? According to that girsa, you know, the first one says Omeid, and the second one says Kayam. There are other girsos which have Omeid in both, or Kayam in both. And that matters. I'll explain that in a minute as well. But let's say you take the girsa that Rabbeinu Yonah had, which is Omeid in the first, meaning Torah Avodah Gemilas Chasadim, and you have Kayam in the second, which is Din, Emes, and Shalom. So what is the difference between Omeid and Kayam? So Rabbeinu Yonah explains that Omeid means the purpose of the world. That's why was the world created. Right? In philosophical terms, you'd use the expression the telos, or the final cause, right? What is the reason that the world was created? The answer is Torah Avoda Gemilas Chasadim, to give man the opportunity to elevate himself as an Oved Hashem in Torah Avoda Gemilas Chasadim. If you ask about Kayam, you're not talking about the purpose of the world, you're talking about what allows the world to function effectively. In other words, what are the indispensable ingredients, right, without which the world would not be able, right, to continue. That things would fall apart. And the answer is Din, Emes, and Shalom. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains, because Din is Choshen Mishpat, and that's the efficient, pragmatic part of Jewish law. That's where we, you know, take into account, you know, how people relate to each other. You know, again, you're learning the sixth parak of Shavuot, so you're learning the sugya on Membeis already with the Neimah Umra Torah. You know, why is it the Motiv Mixas is Chayav Shavua and Kofar Kol is Patur? And you know, there are different ways to read what that question is. You know, what the Havamina was, but either way, a critical part of the answer is Chazaka Einan Ameis Panav. You know, Bifnei Balchova. And that's a pragmatic reading of human nature. You know, whether it means that people can't look, you know, their benefactor in the eye and lie to him, or it means that, you know, people can't, you know, tell a big lie, you know, without blushing, you know, more than blushing, even if it's not their benefactor. And that's what the parameters of it are. That's those machlokas we showed them, and they're very important. And they also highlight values and perspective of the Torah. But the point is that the, you know, migu and ha'aza, umdinas, all of these things are factors that are very pragmatic. They're deeply embedded in human psychology. And it's important to know that. So the Rabbeinu Yonah, when he starts off, you know, in his comment, and Tur quotes us in the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, emphasizes this aspect of din, and even use the expression, ironically, that, you know, without din, you know, you would just say kol da'alam gavar. You know, every man, you know, might makes right. Now, as it happens, it's a little ironic, because there is a category, sometimes the halacha says kol da'alam gavar, and that's a topic in its own right. But what he meant, it, you know, basically was as a melitza, meaning isha schavero chayim blo. If you don't have any kind of legal system, then, you know, one man will swallow another. So in order to keep society going, you just need to have limits, you need to have red flags, and you need to have rules. So there is that aspect of Choshen Mishpat, and I would just add that there are dinim in Choshen Mishpat which highlight that. We say masna masha kasa b'torah, generally speaking, hatnai batel, maisa kayam, If a person wants to rewrite the halacha in most areas of the halacha, he can't do it. It's not his to rewrite. The halacha is an objective system. And you know, people can't get together and decide that they're, you know, that they're going to dispense with, you know, chiyuvei or hagdaros of the halacha, all things being equal, except in the area, perhaps, of choshen mishpat. Here, there's a machlokas from Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. It doesn't come up in Shavuos, as I recall, but it comes up in other masechtas that I'm sure you've all learned, and in Ksuvis and in Makos and in. You know, Bab Metzia, it's all over the Shas, right? Where the Masa Masha Kosa B'Torah B'Tanai Davar Shev B'Mamon is Kayam. And what that highlights is that in the area of Mamonis, there's greater flexibility. Now, there are still two perspectives on that, and that's not our sheer topic for today. But one is to see it even, you know, in more limited terms, meaning it's Mimochel, there's Mechila in Dine Mamonis. So I can be Mochel, whatever obligation the Torah, you know, insists initially exists. But there's a more ambitious view of the Rishonim, and that is the view that you can, it's not mechila, you can get together with your friend and decide that, you know, as far as this transaction that the two of you are entering into, assuming it doesn't involve other people, that you want to change the rules a little bit, within reason. That's a remarkable thing. We have a concept of hefker, bezdin, hefker, which says that bezdin has, you know, the right, you know, I don't know if it's the right of eminent domain, but it's a right to basically to confiscate people's property. Again, that is something which highlights a certain flexibility, right, in Choshen Mishpat. And there's quite a few other examples of that as well. Moreover, the halacha recognizes dinin of Bnei Noach. The halacha recognizes that non-Jews are obligated to have a legal system as well. We'll speak about that in a couple of minutes, what that means. But especially according to the Ramban, talk about in a moment, this means a comprehensive legal system, one which is almost as comprehensive or as comprehensive, maybe even identical, I'll explain in a minute, as our Choshen Mishpat. The very fact that Jewish law recognizes or demands that non-Jews have an equivalent civil law system speaks volumes about the awareness that civil law is a need, universal need, for all societies and all cultures, and that it doesn't necessarily have to be integrated fully, you know, with a certain religious sensibility, a certain spiritual ambition, because the secular world or the non-Jewish world is not held to that ambition. So if it's held to a legal system and not to the ambition, then obviously there's a sense that the two can be splintered. But that's only one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is that Choshen Mishpat is a full partner and fully integrated into the rest of Torah. Right. We find some differences and allowances made for the fact that it's the area of human interaction, but at the same time, whether it's in the area of the Mitzvah Talmud Torah, no one will ever say to you, how could you be spending a year learning Shuas HaDayanim? You know, you should be learning, you know, Kalim or Mikvos or you know, Shabbos or Moed Katan, right? It would be absurd. No one will ever say to you, don't learn Masechet Shavuos on Shabbos, right? Because it doesn't matter that it deals with the interface of human beings and very concrete, you know, things. If you were to do some of those things on Shabbos, that would be a problem. But to study them on Shabbos is the regular mitzvah of Talmud Torah, no less than, you know, the Chayyadim in his little sefer, Zichur Torah Moshe, says it's like an inyan to learn Inyane Shabbos on Shabbos. Okay. But that's because it's Inyane Shabbos on Shabbos, not because it's not Shabbistic to learn other things, just the kiyum of Shabbos, you know, to get more into Shabbos. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, Ezo Neshech or Shavuos HaDayanim, you know, or Arba Avos Nezikin, it's the same Talmud Torah as they say, as you know, as Kachim and Taharos, and that's perfectly clear. It's the same Dvar Hashem. It's the same Chefzah Shel Torah. It's the same authority, you know, foundation. The Torah tells us in Parsha Shoftim that, you know, Ki Pali Mimcha Davar, when things get, you know, difficult and you're not able to figure out what it is that you should do. There's some gray area, and you need halachic decision-making on the highest level. So you go to the Jewish Supreme Court, right? Bein dam ladam, bein din ladin, bein nega lanaga, divrei ribos bisharecha, v'kam tovi alisa l'makom. Right? It doesn't matter whether it's in a matter of taharos, or a matter of kadshim, or a matter of ishus, or a matter of kosher mishpat. In all cases, the authority figures are the same. They're the Bezin HaGadol that is sitting in the Lishkas HaGazis. That's a remarkable thing. Right? For the idealistic, dayanim, Bezin HaGadol, to be the experts and the arbiters on Inyanei Kadshim and Taharos, and also to be the arbiters on Arba Avos HaZikin, is not only bespeaks of a wide range, but it speaks of a certain integration of the different mikzos HaTorah, notwithstanding the individual emphasis of each one. And that is surely very, very important. The Rambam in Perek Dalet, Hilchos Sanhedrin, has a very remarkable halacha. Okay. Rambam here speaks about the topic of smicha. If I can find it here, So the Rambam introduces a very, very important concept. Rambam says, we know from the Gemara already that smicha, which is the old, real, rabbinic ordination, ishmi pi ishmi Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin in the first parak speaks about different, levels, different areas of expertise. Yore yore, which is like Isur v'Heter, yadin yadin, which is what we call Chosh Mishpat, yatir b'choros yatir, which is exactly what it sounds like, Heter b'choros, knowing the mumim and all those kind of things, and so on. And it's perfectly clear from the Gemara that there were people who had the license, to practice, in Yore Yore and not in Yadin Yadin, or Yadin Yadin and not Yatir Bechoros Yatir. In other words, that you could split. You don't have to know all, or you don't have to be licensed in all or nothing. That's perfectly clear from the Gemara. However, the Rambam, probably based on the Yerushalmi, it certainly doesn't appear in the Bavli, explains that Yesh Lahen Limdos L'Koma Sheyirtzu L'Dvarim Bechidim. But v'hu sheyia roi l'chal advarim. And this is a very important yisod in Yahadus. Rambam says, again, people struggle to find out what his makar is, but probably it's based on Yerushalmi in Chagiga, that even though you can limit somebody's practitioning, area to one of the above, he has to, have been exposed sufficiently and be a sufficient expert that he's roi l'horos b'chol ha-Torah kula. Then yesh lebezel lismocho sov litan l'rishus ladun lo lahoros biser v'heter or yitna l'rishus lahoros biser v'heter lo ladun dinei mamonis yitna l'rishus lazeh v'lazeh avol lo ladun dinei knasos lo ladun dinei knasos avol lahater b'choros b'mumon yitna l'rishus lahater nedarim or liros k'samim v'chein kyotze b'zeh. You get the idea. You could also limit one's time. You say, oh, you can paskin this area, but only for certain. V'chein yesh l'somchin liten rishus ad zman l'mer l'nismak eshecha rishus l'adun o l'horos ad sheyavo anasi l'kan o kol zman she'enata imanu b'medina v'chein kol kiyotze b'zeh. So you can limit someone's practicing, area, but in time or in content and in token. But according to the Rambam, he has to be roy l'horos b'chol ha-Torah kula. And the question, of course, is why? Why would that be true? What this highlights is the idea of, again, ben dam ladam, ben din ladin, ben nega lanaga, the kamta v'yalisa. Chosha mishpat, or the principles of chosha mishpat, are as much doraisa and as much immutable, right, as the other areas of halacha are, the dinim of gneva and gzela, and the dinim of nezikin. It's true that there's masa masha kasa batar v'tai damar shiva momon, at least according to one Tana, who we paskin like, but that doesn't change the fact that the principles and the values are as fixed as the dinim of Zroim and Taharos and Kachim. Indeed, I mentioned before that, while Rabbeinu Yonah emphasizes the girsa of Al Shlosh Advarim Ha'olam Omeid Torah Avodah Gmilus Chasadim and the girsa of Kayam and Din Emes and Shalom, the fact is that there are different girsos, and some girsos have omed for the second one as well. So if we take Rabbeinu Yonah's reading of omed, which means the purpose, the telos, why was the world created? And a very intriguing question. It was created so that man could cultivate like these very lofty, you know, values and principles. And if that applies now to din, as well as to emes and shalom, then surely that says something about all three. At the moment, we're interested in din. So din is both idealistic, even as it is also pragmatic. That's a fascinating combination. The Gemara says in Bava Kamma, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, that Hayman Deboy Lebeheva Chasida, if a person wants to be a chassid, Lekiyume Milsa, right, De Avos, another Mandamar says De Brachos, another Mandamar says De Nezikin. So the question is, what does that mean? What do we mean, what does it mean? Two things. Number one, the word Lekiyume always caught my eye. I've never seen other people make the Ha'ara, but what do you mean Lekiyume? You don't usually fulfill Nezikin. You can fulfill Avos and you can fulfill Brachos. They're mitzvos. They're kiyumim. You fulfill them. But when it comes to the matter of Nezikin, you don't fulfill Nezikin. You avoid Nezikin. That's just number one. Okay, it could be just a little linguistic, you know, anomaly in order to not have to repeat the verb. Fine. Liminue instead of, would have said le'amnue or liminue instead of le'kiyume if it had only been speaking about one. But the other one, of course, is just the idea itself. If you're talking about a chassid, what is a chassid? Right, it's not somebody, you know, from the 17th, or from the 18th century, or, you know, since, you know, who has certain, you know, kind of practices. A chassid in the world of halacha has a very specific connotation. Its connotation is lifnim b'shuras hadin. Person who does things lifnim b'shuras hadin. The Rambam says this explicitly, so do others in other places. Lifnim b'shuras hadin for brachos, very understandable. That's bin adam l'makom. Person is makbid on his brachos, right? It reflects a certain sensitivity about his own role in the world and the thanks that he owes to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Avos, ethics, right? The values that are, you know, enumerated in Pirkei Avos, some of which are, you know, very ambitious, very difficult to achieve, right? Controlling one's ego, the way you interact with your neighbor. Some of them really are quite lifnim b'shuras hadin. But Nezikin doesn't seem to be a category which is nitan to be perceived as lifnim b'shuras hadin on the surface. And it's the basic, you know, minimum that any society requires in order to function. So, in what sense is that lifnim b'shuras hadin? But if you look at the Gemara there, on Daf Lamed, the Gemara is speaking about a very specific issue. The context is that if a person in his own property, you know, finds that there are dangerous, you know, obstacles or traps, skuchios and machtim, you know, needles and glass, that's his property. You know, he could just say, you know, enter, beware. But the obligation he has is to, like, protect anybody who would come into his property by digging, you know, deep, well, not so deep, but digging enough that, you know, the machatin and the schuchios don't pose any kind of hazard for the, you know, for the person who enters into property. You could say it's his property, right? If he wants to invite someone in and the person comes in, it's at his own risk. That's lifnim b'shuras hadin. Meaning that the halacha goes beyond the normal concept of bailus and demands that a person limit his own bailus for the sake of his friend is an example of the halacha's unique perspective on civil law, even the most basic law of damages. The beginning of Bava Basra is all about, hezek re'iyah. And Nizke Shchenin. And the question always arises, what do we mean about Hezek Re'iyah? What do those words even mean? What we're talking about in Hezek Re'iyah is privacy, the dignity of man. Right? You don't build architecturally, you shouldn't build a community in such a way that people can see into each other's homes. People have the right of privacy, part of their Tzelem Elokim. part of what Bilam, against his will, was was gushing about, Matavu alecha Yaakov mishkin osecha Yisrael. So Chazal say in the end of Perek Cheskes Abatim that Bilam looked at the he was looking down because he wanted to makalel Klal Yisrael, and he saw the architectural structure of the community, and like he was blown away. So he realized that they built in such a way as to preserve people's privacy and their dignity. What that said about tznius and mutual respect and living a life, of certain values, was just so he broke out in unintended praise. So the idea of hezek ri'a is an extraordinary, but we call it hezek damages. Meaning, if you have already a context and an aspiration of tzelem elokim, so then, it's actually nezek when that is violated. A function of the expectation and the the additional commitment to your neighbor redefines. And this is a very important yisod, a very important concept in the iser of nezek and in many things in choshen mishpat. Not for now, but it's something that comes back again and again. But it's what's unique about halacha's approach. Same in this kesheinim, right? Again, nezek, it wouldn't qualify as nezek if they weren't shcheinim. Right. In Hilchos Shcheinim of the Rambam, or it's a symbolic equivalent, again, the fact that, what do they say, good fences, good neighbors. That's the beginning of Masechet Bava Basra, in a word. Right? The fence fell down, and whose responsibility is it, and how do you build it up? Right? It's not just about a fence. It's about an extraordinary level of mutual consideration and going to lengths to avoid acrimony between neighbors, and that's reflected by what you do just pragmatically when the fence falls down, who takes responsibility, and so on and so forth. So these that's Haiman de Boil and Heva Chasida Likiume Mili de Nezikin. It always occurred to me that it's very fascinating that the very same Rabbeinu Yonah, who develops this idea of Omed and Kayam, and also who was quoted by his Talmidim in the parish that we now have of Parish Rabbeinu Yonah La Torah in Parshas Mishpatim, is again forwarding a very pragmatic view of Choshen Mishpat Leumat, in contrast to the other Miktzos HaTorah. That very same Rabbeinu Yonah has a remarkable reading of the first Mishnah in Avos. First Mishnah in Avos says, well, it starts off, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinim, Misar Le'Yashua, Yashua L'Skenim, Skenim L'Navim, Navim Misaro L'Kanche Knes Sagdola. That itself is interesting. This many people have commented on. We dafka have the enumeration of the Misorah in the Hagdama to Avos, which is probably the most universal of all aspects of Jewish literature. I wouldn't even say Jewish law, because some of it isn't law, some of it is just literature. Right? This is ethical literature, ethics of our father. That's how they translate it in English, both American and the King's English. So, ethics of our father. What do you mean, ethics of our father? Right? It's very universal. And we dafka begin it by the Masorah. So, that's the point. I mean, you just can't separate out these things. The Masorah is critical to developing or cultivating, proper ethical postures. But then, right after having said that, and maybe in connection with it, Haim Amru Shlosha Dvarim. Right, so they said three things. What were the three things? The first one was Hevel Mesunim Badin. So that usually is translated, be deliberate in judgment. And that's probably the pshat. Rabbeinu Yonah, the same Rabbeinu Yonah who underscored the pragmatic aspect of Choshen Mishpat, which the Tur quotes in his Hakdama, has the following interpretation of that. He says, see if we can find it here. Rabbeinu Yonah. Move backward a little bit. Yeah. He says as follows: Atam al Sha'amar Hevem Masunim Bedin Kede Lahazir Yoser al Hadinim Mishar Horos Sheheim Ikar Gadol b'yidias yizbarach. He says the reason that what we mean when we say have a matunim b'din, also at least, is you should be deliberate when you study din, when you study choshem mishpat, when you study shvuos adayanim, when you study shvuos ha'edus, when you study shvuos ha'pikadim, when you study bab metziah, when you study bab basra, and so on. What do you mean? Shehem ikar gadol? You would have thought in the survival of society, right? In kayam. And that's how what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Shehem ikar gadol, biyadiyas yisparach, kamosh amar Yirmiyahu Hanavi, haskel viyadoa osi. Right, if you want to be wise or intelligent and know me, we all want to know the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what we were put on this world for, to do the impossible, to develop a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do you do that? Right? Haskel v'yadoa si kani Hashem osa chesed mishpat u'tzadaka ba'aretz. Ki ba'ela chafatzin u'ma Hashem. Eich yaskil adam adas es Hashem v'hu davar hanimna. Rabbeinu Yonah knew the philosophical problem. Right? This is absolutely impossible. How can man know God? Man is a puny, right, limited figure. Right? Kitzelover. You know, he's like a passing shadow. Ribbono Shel Olam is forever. He's omnipotent. He's omniscient. How can there be such a relationship between such unequal, just stratospherically, you know, different realms? Ach bezos yadanu lasos din umishpat ki Hashem asas elu. Zeu shenemar don din ani ve'evyon oz tov. Halohi hadas osi ne'um Hashem. Uksiv v'makom acher ma Hashem doresh mimcha ki masos mishpat ve'avas chesed. Ki hadinin heim shorish gadol haTorah umehem nishtei sa'olam kamo shomer medrash ksiv lefnei aseres hadibros v'shaftu sa'am b'chaleis ksiv la'akar aseres hadibros ve'elam mishpatim mashul matrinusa shayholaches b'derech v'avadeha holkim lefaneha la'achareha b'kli zayin, etc. This is Rabbeinu Yonah's statement. This is the other shoe, you know, proverbially, that, you know, on the one hand, there's Choshen Mishpat being unique as, you know, the interface with other human beings, you know, and taking into account psychology and need and efficiency and so on. And at the same time, this is Dafka, the area where Haskel v'yadoa osi hevu mesunim badin. That's a remarkable kind of a statement. The very same Rabbeinu Yonah. And it's in the same Perush. It's not like he was Choser, right? It's in his Perush on Avos. What this highlights, I think, or what this helps us to understand also, is certain problems. A couple of weeks ago we read Parshas Mishpatim, and in Parshas Mishpatim, right, we encounter in the very first pasuk several challenging elements. The Torah says, Ve'ela Mishpatim asher tasim lefneihem. We'll stick to Rashi for the moment. I'll mention the Ramban for a second. So the Rashi says, Ve'ela mishpatim komakam shenemar eila pasalus harishonim. Ve'ela mosif al harishonim. Ma rishonim misinai, afela misinai. V'lam edis v'chal parshas dinam v'parshas mizbeach. V'lam v'chal shetasim sanhedrin etzal amikdash. So already you have two intriguing things. All right, the first one is that there's a kesher between, Rav Shechter actually mentioned it for those who were here last night, between the Eila Mishpatim and the previous Parsha in Yisro, which speaks about the Aseres HaDibros. To teach you, says Rashi, quoting the Medrash, Ma Rishonim Misinai Af Eila Misinai. Would we have thought otherwise? Right? I mean, isn't this true for all areas, or everything that is mentioned in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah? We have a similar discussion about, you know, Ma'inyan Shmita Itzal Har Sinai, that Rashi also quotes, quoting the Sifra, in Parshas Bahar. Right, and again, you know, Ma Elu Klaloseim Pratoseim Misinai Af Kulam Klaloseim Pratoseim Misinai. But why, whenever you have that kind of a you know, diuk in Chazal, you always wonder, like, why here? Like, what was the Havamina Dafka that this needs to be reinforced here? Why Dafka and Mishpatim? Second point, that the connection between the Mizbeach, this is what Rav Shechter was also referring to last night, and the Sanhedrin is to teach you that the Sanhedrin, the Lishkas, should be sitting in Lishkas HaGazis. If the Sanhedrin is not sitting in Lishkas HaGazis, then the entire court system, the network, like, is somewhat attenuated and disrupted. It can't operate for, capital crimes and knassos unless it's in the shadow or the environment, better way to say it, of the mizbeach, of the lishus hagazus. Okay, that's an interesting thing to know, but the question is why? Why do we need to emphasize that mishpatim are misinai, and why, in fact, does the court system need to be connected to the mizbeach, which is a whole different area in the halacha? A third point. Asher tasim lefnehem, omer l'Kadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, lo talel da'atcha lomar eshtalem aperek v'halacha beis gimel pa'amim ad shetei sedura v'fiem kimishnasa, v'eni matriach atzmi la'avinam tam me'adavar u'perusho, l'kach nemar asher tasim lefnehem, k'shulchan ha'aruch u'muchan l'achol lefnei ha'adam. Also very intriguing, what does it mean? Asher tasim lefnehem, meaning the shiur shouldn't just be, to teach you facts and have you memorize them, right? By rote, so you'll know them. But you should have it should be taught in a way so that you have a deep understanding, that you internalize, what you're studying. That's very educationally and pedagogically important, right? But why dafka on the mishpatim? Right? Isn't that true for other areas of halacha too? Why do we have to emphasize that particularly when it comes to mishpatim, right? And then we keep going on. Lifneim, v'lo lifnei akum. Okay, I mean you should go to Jewish courts and not secular courts. V'afili yadata b'din echad sheim dani noso k'dinei Yisrael, al tivyehu barkos shalahem. Even if, this is the Kiddush, even if the content of their law in an area is identical with our law, nonetheless, there is a prohibition to go to a non-Jewish court. Shamevi dinei Yisrael lifnei armayim, Mechalas Hashem, Miyakar Hashem Ba'alilim, Lahashbicham. Shenamar Kilo Kitzurenu Tzuram, Va'ivenu Plilim, Kishar Ivenu Plilim, Zo Edus Lilui Yirasam. It's a Chil Hashem. Okay. There is certainly an aspect of Chil Hashem, but it's hard to understand this particular Chil Hashem, because the Tochen is the same. I mean, is it only that there's an implication of the inadequacy of our system? That's why we have to look, to the outside. Is that the only thing that we're talking about? The Ramban has a slightly different emphasis of all of this, not denying the Chilul Hashem component, but he seems like he goes beyond it. And for the Ramban, this is particularly interesting and important for the following reason that I alluded to before. There's a debate between the Ramban and the Rambam. It comes to the fore, particularly in Parshas, in the interpretation of events in Parshas Vayishlach. What happened in Vayishlach? The Dina story. Right? So Dina was violated and abducted, and Shechem ben Hamor was enamored with her, he wanted to marry her. Some deal was struck, with Yaakov Avinu, and then Shimon and Levi, right, came and massacred, all of them. Right, in order to protect, and in order to protect the dignity and also the person of Dina. That's the story that takes place in Vayishlach. So, of course, the question is, who is right and who is wrong, and what about all those recriminations? Right? Yaakov Avinu was very critical of his sons, Shimon and Levi, and his recriminations. Achartem osi b'enei ha'aretz, and they said, lo kein osim b'mkomeinu. This is a violation not only of Dina, but the entire house of Yaakov. Everybody's speaking very strongly, in that context. And then, just in case you had any doubts, so when you get to Parshas Vayichi, so then that's the final legacy of Yaakov Avinu, right? And he gathers together all his sons. And you'd think that after all that time, and, it's not like there wasn't any fallout from the, as far as we know, from the Shimon and Levi action. In other words, Yaakov and his children survived and even thrived. So by then, you'd think that his tone would have softened a little bit. But it didn't. If anything, it's even harsher in retrospect. Right? Arura pam kiaz, evrasam ki kashasa, right? Achalkein bi Yaakov, afitzein bi Yisrael, Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chamas mecheros sehem. Right, Yaakov Avinu is very critical, and this is the last, his last legacy. I mean, he's about to leave the world. This is all he can say to Shimon and Levi. So what is really going on there? So there's a major debate between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam in Hilchos Malachim says, listen, what happened here, or the background here, is Dinim of Bnei Noach. Shemitz Bnei Noach of seven mitzvahs. One of them is called Dinim. Dinim is exactly what? So the Rambam says Dinim is very limited. Dinim is very, you know, telescoped. There are six other mitzvahs Bnei Noach, and the seventh, Dinim, is to implement or execute, you know, Tarti Mashma, actually, execute in the sense of implement and execute in the sense of execute, the violators of the first six. So if somebody, you know, violated Gezel, for example, and no one, you know, was punishing them for it, bringing them, you know, to court and implementing capital punishment, so then the whoever stands by, you know, neglecting that obligation is in violation of dinim. So the Rambam says, fundamentally, Shimon and Levi had a good claim, because they said, you know, Shechem was a goslin, at minimum, and he should have been put to death. The town people, you know, didn't implement that. They protected him instead. So they all deserve the death penalty for violating the seventh of the Shemitz Bnei Noach, dinim. And Shimon and Levi had justification in that respect. What the Rambam doesn't explain, and this is not our topic today, is if that's true, so why was Yaakov Avinu so unhappy? And why was he so critical? And if he was just worried at the moment, you know, he was just out of fear what would happen in the present, so then at least all those years later, right, he should have softened his tone. And indeed, that's what the Ramban, these are some of the questions that the Ramban in Vayishlach raises against the Rambam Shita. The Ramban himself says that dinin has a totally different meaning. Dinin is that non-Jews should develop a comprehensive legal system. In other words, they should have an extensive civil law, which includes damages and laws of pikadon and shomrim and onah, you know, and all sorts of different, all the areas of halacha that we know of in Choshen Mishpat should also apply to Bnei Noach. That's a very ambitious aspiration on our behalf, our part, for non-Jews. It's a little inspirational. But it goes even a step further according to the Ramah. There's a debate between the Ramah and the Netziv about the following point. So we, according to the Ramban, you need a system as comprehensive, parallel to Jewish civil law for non-Jews, or do we actually mean that they should adopt the best, most efficient system, namely Choshen Mishpat itself? So the Ramah says, I think it depends. Tshuva, Simon Yud. The Ramah says, I think it depends. It depends on the Makar. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Nunvav or so. So there are different ways to derive the Shevnitz Bnei Noach. Vayitzav Elokim. So is it Dinim is derived from Vayitzav, or Dinim is derived from the word Elokim? It's Machlokas in the Gemara. I think a Brochen and Reish Lakish. So the Ramah, fascinatingly, this, I don't think anybody said it before him, but says it depends. If Vaitzav is a source of Dinim Bnei Noach, so then it's sufficient that it be Nimusim, Nimusehem, as long as they're, you know, just. Like, there can be many, you know, fair legal systems. Right? Judaism isn't the only fair legal system. It's the only just legal system, right? There, I mean, I'm not an expert of the Code of Hammurabi, or the Magna Carta, or even the Constitution, but, you know, there have been many societies who, you know, were able to develop very admirable, very ethical, you know, mostly very fair systems of civil law. So if it's Vaitzav, that's fine. We don't care the details. We care that it should be not arbitrary, but fair. It should reflect, you know, respect for, you know, mutual respect one person to the other, and so on. However, if it's derived from the word Elokim, that has a different connotation. That has a connotation in general. We'll discuss this in a second. But the word Elokim, right, is used in two different ways in Tanakh. Right? Most important is that it refers to the Rodosh Olam. It's divine meaning. It also has the meaning of Elohim, Right, v'nikra balabayis el ho Elohim. Right, asher lo shalach yadom v'malachas rei. And several other places. We learned three dayanim smuchim in the Gemara in Sanhedrin from the word, for the use of the word, the triple use of the word Elohim. But it's surely not a coincidence that Elohim and Elohim, right, are spelled the same way, and that we signify Dayan Elohim, right, by the same bitui that is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elohim. So basically what the Rambam was saying was, if from the word Elohim we derive Dinin of Bnei Noach, then they should really be adopting the divine system of civil law, Choshen Mishpat. Now, if you say that that is true, then Itziv disagrees. And Itziv says, but he disagrees, he likes the analysis, then Itziv in Perush on the Shultos says, I like the analysis. Well, he doesn't say I like the analysis, but he likes the analysis. And he says, however, I think that we should really, I think the preponderant evidence that we paskin that the source is Vayitzav, not Elohim. Whereas the Ramah says, I think it's Elohim. So the Ramah really thinks that according to the Ramban, Udine, that you should have Choshen Mishpat. Wow. That's amazing. But then when you think about it, so the Netziv says, if that's really what the Ramah thinks, and I have a good kasha. The kasha is, we say we have all these wonderful midrashim. Magid devarav liyakov, chukov mishpatav liyisrael. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, lo asachen l'chol goyim mishpatim ba yidaum haleluka. We say it every day, right? So what does it mean? Think about it. Magid devarav liyakov, chukov mishpatav liyisrael. The Ribbono Shel Olam gives us his laws. Right, he doesn't do this for other nations. Umishpatim ba'yidom, they don't know the concept of mishpat. Haleluka, and that's why we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he singled us out. Asher b'char bonam mikalo amim. That's a wonderful pasuk. Is that pasuk fit with the reality that we know when we analyze the halacha? So according to the Rambam, it does. According to the Netziv's understanding, the dinim are some fair system, but not kosher mishpat. I guess it does. We're making the claim that our Choshen Mishpat is a divine system. It's not just efficient, but it's principled, right? But according to the Ramah, the reading of the Ramban, how can you say Mishpatim Bayidom Al-Lukah? Not only do they have a legal system, it's really a problem for the Ramban in general, but especially for the Ramah, they have our legal system. Another way to ask the same question is, according to, what do we say? Even if the token is the same. But it's one thing to say, you know what, the token is the same here and there. But let's say they did what they were supposed to do, right? Idealistically, according to the Ramah's reading of the Ramban, adopt Choshen Mishpat as their legal system. So even then, we would say that there's an Yisra'ar. It sounds like it. The Yisra'ar Kos doesn't seem to be conditioned on the... I mean, shouldn't the Yisra'ar Kos, it's a pasuk in Chumash, right? It's the drasha of a pasuk in Chumash. Yelam mishpatim b'asher tasim lefneihem. So it doesn't apply in a situation that they were to implement their Elohim. I can't prove to you that this is the case. I'm just saying it doesn't make so much sense. So how do you have an Yisra'ar Kos, and how do you have a mishpatim b'yidaum haluka according to the Ramah? This would seem to be a huge problem. But the answer, I think, is rooted in what we've been saying. And it's highlighted in a very pithy kind of line in the Gemara in Brachos. Gemara in Brachos of Zayin with Beis tells us that, where there has like all sorts of, Shnaim Shadanu, Shlosh, Shnaim Sheyoshvim Velomdim Torah, Shlosha. Anyways, among them, the Gemara has Shlosha Sheyoshvu Vedan Adin Emes Lamito, Shchina Shuria Bene. That's what the Gemara says. So then the Gemara says, Pshita. Right, and they have all these other gemaras that say Shkina's Shuria, if you sit and learn, etc. So if the judges are done din emes lamito, certainly that should be the case. So the gemara says Solkadait Chamina Shalma Bialmahu Kamash Malan Torahi. That kind of captures the whole talk, the whole issue, right? Meaning, one would have thought that din Choshen Mishpat done din lamito. It's about harmony. It's about shalom. It's about, the pragmatic effect of, precluding chaos in society. No ishes kaver chayim b'la'o. So that society can focus on other things. What are the other things? The values that are more transcendent. the Taros and the Kadshim and the Zrayim and maybe even the Kedushas HaIshus and the Moed and so on. Right, because this is an area which overlaps with any community of people, and is even a requirement of dinim. Kamash Malan, Kosha Mishpat isn't just shalom; it's also shalom, and shalom affects it, but it's din, and that's the point. The point is that, as I said before, Jewish judges are determined by the word Elohim, which is surely connected to Elohim. And the idea is that you can elevate even Chosha Mishpat, l'kiyume mila d'nezikin, so that even if you have the exact same dinim, there's still a huge difference. In other words, a dinim which is integrated with the Taharos and the Kodshim and the Zeraim is a different dinim, because you're then going to highlight those elements, right, which really are part of the transcendent part, part of the Avodas Hashem part. And on the contrary, in the context of that wider diet of Aruch Chaim and of Evan Hoezer and of Kodshim and Taharos, the dinim are different. Right, the rules can be the same, but as part of a integrated, like total commitment, even the tochen, right, becomes, of a different character and a different significance. And that's what the Gemara meant, and that's what Elohim means, and that's something which is reflected in many aspects of the halachos that govern Chosha Mishpat. So, Dafka, according to the Ramah, where the identity between the two seems to be the closest, is there a greater Chilul Hashem in a way in the Yisur of Arkos? Because if you go to Arkos and you say, well, it's the same system, right? So what are you really saying? What you're saying is, Bein Dam L'Dam, Bein Din L'Din, Bein Ega L'Naga, the idea of this being part, not just an excellent system, but part of a person's development as an Oven Hashem, that part we don't accept. We don't think that part is important. Turning your back on the religious component, the spiritual component of Chosha Mishpat, is a Chilul Hashem. It's a violation of our kolos. That's why it was so important, Ve'ela HaMishpatim, right, to emphasize all of these other components. Right? Ve'ela Mosif HaRishonim, Ma'ela Misinai, Af Zeh Misinai. What's a Habamina? Sokadai Techamina, Shalom Abiyalma. Kamash Malan, Torahi. That's exactly why you need to emphasize Sinai when it comes to Chosha Mishpat. Similarly, why does the proximity of the Mizbeach, right, dictate when it comes to dinim, generally, the court system? Because that's a way of highlighting the integration of Dafka Chosha Mishpat with Karbanos and the world of Karbanos. There's a very fascinating relationship between Karbanos and Tzedek. We know this from the Navi. Right, Yeshaya and Yecheskel. It's like a refrain in Nevi'im that Lomali Rov Zivchechem. Right, it's always in a context like, what do I need your karbanos for? The Rabbanu Shalom says, if you are not showing kind of loyalty to me, fidelity, right, in the area of Chosha Mishpat, of ethics. If you're cheating your neighbor, your karbanos are meaningless. So is that just a way of saying, it's all or nothing? I think it's more than that. What it's saying is, there's an inextricable link between Chosha Mishpat and Olam HaKarbonos, and the Mizbeach. You can't have one without the other. When you do, it attenuates, or destroys, or corrupts even, all of them. Indeed, Mitzvah Baba Veira, right, is, Gozel Karbon, is the interface of these two things. It exactly shows that the Tchumim are integrated. When I say, it's a lovely korban, he's ben odom lamakom, is perfect, right? Okay, he stole it. But he didn't steal it to build a new wing to his home. He stole it to give a korban. He's misled. It's something which obviously is not justified, but it comes from a good place, at least in terms of his ben odom lamakom. It's considered a stira minei obey. There's no such thing. There's no division when it comes to the different mikzos haTorah in that sense. So that's the Ve'ela HaMishpatim. Asher Tasim Lefnehem means Kishulchan HaAruch. It's not enough to memorize the laws. Now, if the law was intended merely to separate people, to preclude anarchy, then why wouldn't it be enough to separate people from that kind of behavior? If it's efficiency alone that you're looking for, then you can accomplish your goal as long as people even robotically memorize the laws. Why is it so important that it be barur, the tamim be barur? Because Choshen Mishpat, Haskel V'Yadoa Osiya, Rabbeinu Yonah, the idea that if you study it well and you understand the nuances and everything that's involved in it, that is something which can transform your life, at least your relationship with your neighbors, the way that you look at property, etc. If you don't have that ambition of Asher Tasim Lefnehem, you're missing out on the Ela HaMishpatim in a very real sense. And that, of course, is, as we explained, the concept of Lifneim, Lifneim Velo Lifnei Akum. It's fascinating that the Ramban, in his Perush on Ve'ela HaMishpatim, says that the connection is to the last of the Aseres HaDibros, Los Achmod. Los Achmod is a very fascinating conclusion to Aseres HaDibros. I don't want to discuss that now. That's also a topic in its own right. But the, Bekitzur, the short version is that Los Achmod is particularly demanding and challenging. And, this is highlighted by the very famous comment on the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says, how can you legislate in the area of emotions? How can you tell people not to covet, what their neighbor has? And even if you assume, which is halakhically correct, that we're not talking about a fleeting thought. You walk by a nice car, a nice building, and you say, I'd like to have something like that. Let's say we're talking about something which is more of a preoccupation, even an obsession, which is probably what Los Achmod and Los Asava really is. But even then, can you really control that or expect to control that? That's Ibn Ezra's question, not the middle part, the first part. His answer is very powerful. And Sefer HaChinuch says something comparable, and that is that basically, people's sense of reality, of the norm, is a function of their own values. What he says is that, people don't get up in the morning and, realistically obsess about sprouting wings and flying. Right? Bismanenu, might think that they can do other things, but, normal people, people within the norm of behavior, who are not, psychotic or deluded, right, they know, whatever dreams and aspirations they have, their sense of healthy realism, right, is something that limits them. And that's the way it has to be. That's really, speak to a psychologist, they'll tell you that that's what determines normal, a person's sense of reality and the limits, of his aspiration, not aspiration, at least of his realistic aspirations. So the Ibn Ezra says, in the time, when there was a caste system, so the villager didn't really think that he was going to end up, marrying the princess, maybe in Aladdin or something, but not in the real caste world, of ancient society, right? Why? Because it wasn't real, unless he was, again, deluded. And if he was deluded, that would express itself in other ways as well. So the Ibn Ezra says, and a person's commitment to Torah mitzvahs, right, that is less imposing of a reality. So if the Torah tells you, it's your neighbor's wife, it's your neighbor's car, so, that should impose a certain limit in terms of realism of your obsessions. You shouldn't be able to obsess about attaining something that, he doesn't want to sell to you, or he doesn't want to give up, and the way to convince him, right, would be completely inappropriate in terms of halachic values. People have told me, that, Baruch Hashem, we live in a world where people are not smoking as much, which is a good thing. But, in decades past, there were a lot of people who did smoke. So people used to tell me that on Shabbos, like a Shomer Shabbos, let me start the other way. A person who is addicted to smoking, so apparently it's really, as to to wean yourself from that addiction is very, very difficult. So what do like smokers do on Shabbos? But people told me that on Shabbos they don't have a problem with it. That's exactly the Ibn Ezra. In other words, it's not a possibility if you're a Shomer Shabbos, to smoke on Shabbos. Physiologically, right? The 24-hour period of Shabbos is different than Thursday or Wednesday, or Yontif. Shavuot Chol. Assuming that you think it's not Shavuot Chol Nefesh, that's an interesting topic in its own right. But it's an example of halachic reality, like a person's level of commitment, right? Really defining, what is possible for him, and that affects, not only his thoughts, but in some cases. It affects him physiologically as well. That's a remarkable thing. That's what the Ibn Ezra is talking about. So what does the Ramban mean when he says that the Eila Mishpatim follows Losachma? I don't know, I'm not sure. But in light of the Ibn Ezra, what I would say is that Losachma challenges us, right, to develop or to cultivate a value system based on the halacha. That's the only way that Losachmud can work, right? And that is translated into the very next important parsha. Ve'ela mishpatim asher tasim lefneihem. In other words, if you're able to understand what is unique about these values and integrate them into your lives to such an extent that, your sense of property and propriety and your fellow's rights and his dignity, if that becomes your obligation as well, so that's going to solve the Losachmod problem, essentially. Ramban doesn't say this exactly. He does speak about the interface in a more technical way, but I think at least that one could suggest this. And if that's true, we understand many of the Midrashim as well. There are many Midrashim that discuss the problem of Magid Dvarav Liyakov Chukov Mishpatav Yisrael Lo Asachen Lachongoy Mishpatim Bal Yedaum. Haleluka, this idea of mishpatim bal yidaum, and they say v'chi ein dinim, lanachri or ein dinim laakum or ein dinim lebnei noach, or simply ve'ela mishpatim. So what's wrong with non-Jewish legal systems? Some of them are really very, very impressive and edifying, and they're extensive and they're very moral, and they give different answers along the way. What is the schedule? I just want to make sure I have time to give the share. This is just like a little talk. How does it go here, the schedule?
Mincha is at
1:20. Okay. And is that the next thing on the schedule?
Yeah.
So we answered that. And you want to do some questions and answers, too. Yeah. All right. But we're probably answering all the questions. I'm trying to anticipate. I'm just looking at everybody. He's probably sitting on that. So I think we're pretty much taking care of everything at the same time. But we'll finish this part first. We're at close to the end anyway. So there's a very nice medrash which I like to quote whenever I can because I like it. And I assume that everybody else likes it too. It's so good. So the medrash in the beginning, there really have some very nice medrashim in the beginning of Mishpatim about this topic. And one of them, my favorite, is the Ela Mishpatim, Magid Dvarav Liyakov. Again, it's like the short version, what's going on here? Why Mishpatim Bayidah? So the medrash goes like this: Pamachat Omer Lo Akilas Adayonis Amelech Rotze Ani Lehitgayer Ulhi Asot Yisrael. So I want to become a convert. I want to join Klal Yisrael. So Omer Lo Leuma Zu Atam Mevakesh. You want to join with that nation? Kama Bazisi Osa, right? I've humiliated them. Time after time, kama rakti osa, I've decimated them, or I've destroyed them. L'yiruta shabu umos ata mevakish lehisarev. You want to join, that downgraded group, that debased group? Ma reisu b'hem shatarotza lehiskayer. What do you see in these people? So he answered him, oh my lord, this is a fascinating exchange. Hakotan shabahem yodea heich bara kodesh baruch hu sa'olam. Even the smallest among them know the secret how the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. Wow. Okay. Then, Mandivra B'Yom Rishon, what was created on the first day. Mandivra B'Yom Sheni. Kama Yesh Mishanivra Ha'olam. Interesting. Things that they pick, right? Alma Ha'olam Omeid. That's a particular favorite of mine, especially in light of the idea of Omeid. right, versus Kayo. The Torah on MS. And their Torah is simply true. Amalo, Leich, Ulamad Torahson. So go out, learn their Torah. The Al Tamul, but why do you have to do something so radical as undergo a bris mila, which of course is the, you know, the symbol for the convert. Don't convert, don't identify with them nationally. Just, you know, enroll in Yeshivat HaKotel or some other yeshiva, and, you know, you'll get the information, you know, without any of the, you know, the downside. So the Gemara says, so the Medrash says, Amar lo Akilas, afilu chacham shebemalchuska v'zaken b'nei hashana, even the wisest in your realm, and v'zaken b'nei hashana, eino yachal lilmo torasam im eino mal. Look, it's an amazing statement, right? It's not about intelligence. It's not about intellectual effort, even, you know, intellectual sophistication. To really study their Torah, you have to undergo a bila. I mean, you have to be Mizkayer. You have to identify with the fullness of Jewish people. You have to be in this as an insider, as somebody who's a mitzuveh, right? It's not sufficient that you know the Mishpatim. Remember, this starts off with Magid Dvarav Yaakov. This is a medrash on the words the Ela Mishpatim, right? The unspoken part is the question, right? You know, they have an impressive civil law system. You know, we'll study it in law school. That's the point. You can't study it in law school. You can only study it in yeshiva when you underwent a bris mila and you identify with Klal Yisrael in all of its, you know, historical difficulties and vicissitudes, and when you're committed, you know, to all aspects of Torah. Shechein kasuv magid dvarav Yaakov kukov mishpatav Yisrael lo asachein l'chogoy ulemi l'bnei Yisrael. So this medrash really just captures, you know, this idea that as much as dinim or choshen mishpat is the, let's say, overlapping aspect or dimension of Yahadus to the rest of the world, and therefore you'd think that it would have the most in common, and to some extent, to a large extent, to a predominant extent, it does. But in the end of the day, the differences are more important than the overlap, and the differences are the idea that, you know, it's not efficiency and effectiveness and, you know, harmony alone. It's efficiency and effectiveness and harmony, right, you know, in an idealistic setting, and one which is integrated with the wide range, the full hekef, you know, of Torah and of Halacha. And if we understand that, then when we learn Masachet Shavuos, or any other aspect of dinim, it really can be haskel v'yado osi. Of course, you know, there's a lot of nitty-gritty. I mean, you have to, learning is not easy, and, you know, there's a text, and it's in a different language, and you have to, you know, understand what the words mean, and then what the Rishonim, how they interpret them, and then, you know, there's the level of analysis, and sometimes, you know, we're focusing on details, but there's no shortcuts, you know, when it comes to Talmud Torah. But when you stick with it, you know, that's why you need the Mila and you need the Tevila. You just can't, you know, go and kind of superficially, you know, cull the information. But when you make that investment and it really becomes internalized, and you, every issue is, you know, is one to be intensely, you know, fascinated with, you know, and immersed in. So then the payoff is really huge. It really is haskel v'yado osi. And it's sometimes invisible, sometimes you can articulate it, and sometimes you can't. But at the end of the day, it's really a very transformative kind of experience. So that's part one, I guess. We can either do a few questions.